I would agree that politically it may be better for the country if people can vote on this and have it not decided on the basis of a provision in the Constitution, but we can't avoid that any more than if it turned out that someone who was 34 years old was running for president, they would be disqualified under the Constitution. So this really does have to be decided by the Supreme Court about whether he is actually qualified to be the next president of the United States.
Yeah, it does have to be decided. It will be decided. But today, you get to decide if it's a good idea.
Well, I don't. I fall off my chair, and I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
I am from Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles. This is The Bradcast. That's heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA, 98.7 in Santa Barbara, 93.7 in San Diego, 99.5 FM in Ridgecrest and China Lake. Also in California, in Red Bluff and Redding on KFOI and Round Mountains, KKRN. Up in Oregon on the Central Coast on KYAQ, Cottage Grove's KSO, Eugene's KEPW, Lanchester, Pennsylvania's W News, Maui, Hawaii's KAKU, in Columbus, Ohio on WGRN, Palinville, New York's WLPP, Rochester, New York's WRFZ, down in New Orleans on WHIV, out in Gallup, New Mexico on KNIZ, Concord, New Hampshire's WNHN, Fayetteville, Arkansas's KPSQ, in Seattle on KODX, Janesville, Wisconsin's WADR, in Minneapolis, St. Paul's AM 950, KTNF, amongst other fine terrestrial stations around the country and world. We also stream coast to coast and around the globe every day on the internets, on the Progressive Voices Channel, Netroots Radio, Radio for Humans, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, No Lies Radio, Verdant Square Radio, and Detour Talk. Blanketing Planet Earth, I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me from bradblog.com. Thank you very much for joining us today for another thrilling edition of The Bradcast. All right, coming up, it has been a few weeks between our own travel and seemingly endless, countless indictments and arraignments, not to mention hurricanes and wildfires and other disasters. So it's been a bunch of weeks since I've been able to open up the phones here on the Bradcast, but I do hope to finally do that today. I would love to hear from you via 818-985-5735 if you're in our live Southern California listening area, or you're tuning in via the live stream at kpfk.org. I'd love to hear from you regarding the issue of disqualifying Donald Trump from the 2024 ballot via Section 3 of the U.S. Constitution's 14th Amendment, the so-called insurrection disqualification clause. And while I personally think the Constitution is very clear on the matter, I realize some may see things differently. If so, I would love to hear from you as well, 818-985-KPFK. But what I really would like to focus in on, specifically on this matter, and get your thoughts on, is not whether the Constitution bars Trump from running next year or not. I believe it does. But whether he should be disqualified on a political level. Should the Constitution and the courts decide, or is this a matter better left to voters, as many Republicans and, yes, Democrats have been suggesting in recent days? I'll get into more details in a bit, but I'd love to hear from you today, 818-985-5735, if you want to line up right now. I'll also try to keep my eyes on my Twitter feed at the Brad Blog. Yes, the site still known as Twitter. Or you can email me via bradcast@bradblog.com. But calling in is the best if you're listening live, 818-985-KPFK. First, however, we need to start here quickly today following several ongoing and or pending disasters as Earth seems to be having an angry several days, to say the least, following a brutal summer. And as we discussed on our Green News Report last week with Desi Doyen, The hottest summer in recorded history.
Yeah, it was hot.
Yeah. Today, that means ongoing catastrophic flooding in Libya, continued recovery from the recent horrific wildfires on Maui, and, well, at least one monster hurricane that we have been keeping a very close eye on over the past week. We'll get to all of those, but first we start today with a story that would seem to have nothing to do with global warming, nonetheless shaping up as an unspeakable disaster and tragedy over the weekend. Villagers wept for their lost relatives in the rubble of their homes on Monday as the confirmed death toll from Morocco's deadliest earthquake in more than six decades rose to some 2,700, with rescuers still racing against time to find and hopefully save survivors. Search teams from Spain, Britain, and Qatar were joining Moroccan rescue efforts after a 6.8 magnitude quake struck late on Friday night in the High Atlas Mountains, with the epicenter 45 miles southwest of Marrakech, where a number of historic sites suffered damage as well. In addition to the stunning number of dead people, the Moroccan state news agency reports at least 2,500 are reported injured. And these numbers are very early. Rescuers warn that the traditional mud brick houses that are ubiquitous in the region reduced chances of finding survivors because they had all crumbled. Footage from remote villages filmed by a Spanish rescuer, Antonio Nogales, of United Firefighters Without Borders, showed men and dogs clambering over steep slopes covered in rubble. He said the level of destruction is absolute. Struggling, he was, to find the right word to describe what he was seeing. Not a single house has stayed upright, he said. After an initial response that was described as too slow by some survivors, search and rescue efforts appeared to be speeding up on Monday, with tent camps now appearing in some locations where people had spent three nights now outdoors. Roads blocked or obstructed by rocks that tumbled down the steep slopes during the quake, that's made it harder for access to the worst-hit locations. The harm done to Morocco's cultural heritage has also been emerging gradually. Buildings in Marrakech, the old city there, a UNESCO World Heritage Site, were damaged. The quake also did major damage to the historically significant 12th century tin mill mosque in a remote mountain area nearer to the epicenter. It was the North African country's deadliest quake since 1960, when a tremor was estimated at the time to have killed at least 12,000 people. And it was the most powerful earthquake since at least 1900, that according to the U.S. Geological Survey. With much of the quake zone in hard-to-reach areas, the authorities have not yet issued any estimates for the number of people missing. So we are around 2,700 dead currently as we go to air, at least 2,500 reported injured. No idea yet how many people are missing. I guess what will have to suffice for some somewhat brighter news as our long, cruel summer turns to autumn. 1 month after the deadliest U.S. wildfire in more than a century leveled the historic town of Lahaina, Hawaii, Governor Josh Green said late last week that the number of missing has dropped to 66. With the confirmed death toll holding for now at around 115, as authorities will soon be escorting residents on visits to their property. Now down to 66, considering that we started at something like 1,000 missing. We'll have to take this for the good news as best we can.
Well, better news. We can call it slightly better news.
Yeah, well, a lot better, given that it was 1,000 missing at one point. Tens of millions of dollars in aid will make its way to families and businesses as they recover, the governor said. And beginning October 8, travel restrictions will end and West Maui will reopen to visitors. Now, you may recall in the days after these apocalyptic fires just swept through Lahaina and elsewhere on Maui. We spoke with someone on the ground at our Maui affiliate, KAKU 88.5 FM, who told us at the time that the best way to help local residents in the immediate aftermath of these fires was, frankly, to stay away, to cancel any travel plans there, that the community was unable to support tourists. A lot of the locals were now living in the hotels and resorts. But, you know, this was a way that people thought, well, I can go to Maui and somehow help the community. Well, the best help at the time was to stay away. Don't come here and spend money. A month later now, apparently, that sentiment is beginning to change, which in and of itself may be seen as an encouraging sign. Governor Green said, quote, "If we support Maui's economy and keep our people employed, they will heal faster and continue to afford to live on Maui." Donations from around the world have poured in to the American Red Cross, Hawaii Community Foundation, Maui United Way, other organizations as well, said Green, and he has authorized $100 million from the federal Temporary Assistance for Needy Families, or TAMF, program, quote, "to support what others donate, magnifying the power of their generosity." The August 8 fire started in the hills above the historic oceanfront town. Within hours, it spread through single-family homes and apartment buildings, quaint city streets, art galleries, restaurants. It destroyed more than 2,000 structures. Dozens of people fled into the ocean seeking refuge from the flames, and the damage, which is estimated to have been some $5.5 billion so far. So this new tally of 66 people still missing, that represents a significant drop-off from just a week earlier. Authorities had said 385 were unaccounted for. With about half the deceased still unidentified, however, Governor Green said he expected there to be significant overlap between the names on the missing list and, sadly, the remains of those that have already been recovered and counted in the death toll. There, he said he did not expect that death toll, therefore, to rise considerably. So again, we're going to have to chalk up that grim news to, well, just about as bright as we can find following that particular climate change enhanced disaster. Governor Green and Maui County officials have come under criticism for not being ready for the wildfire and for a chaotic and disorganized response to it. The governor suggested lawsuits filed against various state and county entities are preventing those in positions of authority from being able to speak out more candidly in response to both causes of the disaster and whether the islands were appropriately prepared for fires of this magnitude. He said, "I can't speak to when people will apologize for this tragedy." He said, "I am heartbroken, and I will tell you and anyone out there, I am so sorry you went through this. Of course," he said, "I'm just one person. It's the world who has to apologize for what we have become, where we have become a world where we turn our backs on global warming and where we didn't prioritize things in advance." Speaking of which, we have been watching very closely since it first spun up about a week ago, a monster storm which has seen, well, what the National Hurricane described as explosive intensification over the past several days. Hurricane Lee, currently threatening Bermuda and possibly the U.S. East Coast. But before we can even get there, we've got reports today of catastrophic flooding in Libya, where their 2,000 are feared dead, according to the prime minister of one of the nation's two rival governments, both of whom have declared some 3 days of mourning in the wake of this disaster. Desi Doyen, you have been keeping your eyes on both that and Hurricane Lee closer to home.
Yep.
Where are we in both cases today?
Well, in Libya, it's just sort of a an unbelievable level of biblical catastrophic flooding. It occurred in eastern Libya. Tropical storm Daniel in the Mediterranean dumped an ungodly amount of rain, and officials in eastern Libya say about 2,000 people are feared dead and thousands more are considered missing. The massive flooding from the rain, it ripped through the city of Derna. Again, this is in the eastern part of Libya, and it's turned the city streets into raging rivers. I don't know if you've seen some of the video on social media. If you looked at a whitewater rafting river, that's what the streets look like. And it swept away buildings, neighborhoods, damaged even, you know, multi-story apartment buildings that collapsed, you know, partially collapsed into the mud. So that is the reason for the massive list of missing.
People thought they were safe in the storm with all the flooding because they're up a few floors in the building, and then the entire building collapses.
Right. And some estimates also put the number of missing at 5,000 to 6,000 potentially. Reuters reports that the spokesperson for the Libyan National Army, they're the ones, that's the competing government that controls eastern Libya. They said in a televised news conference that the floods caused dams above the city of Derna to collapse. Oh. So that's why there was water sweeping through entire neighborhoods. Yep. And he said that appeared that some neighborhoods got swept into the sea. Reuters reports also that emergency response and recovery and public services have all deteriorated quite a bit since the 2011 uprising that has been triggering years of conflict since then. So, you know, this is yet another example of how global warming turbocharges storms. This is the same storm that dumped ungodly rain on Greece. It was 10 inches of rain in just a few hours in Greece last week. This very slow-moving storm is just kind of parked over the southern, I guess it would be the northern Mediterranean, southern Europe, that is that has created this sort of incredible torrential rainfall amounts.
I didn't realize that was the same storm.
Storm
that we have been covering. We covered on Green News Report last week, for the last week or so.
Yes.
Just, again, ungodly amount. A lot of references to God in the Bible today for some reason in this segment. But
true.
I didn't realize that was the same storm.
Yes.
Now, speaking of slow-moving storms, we've been covering for the past week now Hurricane Lee, and it's not even going to arrive in Bermuda, I think, until
later
Friday.
The end of this week or so. Yeah, so Hurricane Lee, it's still churning out there in the open Atlantic. It is being fueled by record-hot Atlantic Ocean waters. The National Hurricane Service Center says that the storm is going to continue to grow in size, and it will probably slow down even more, and it's expected to turn north midweek or so, and that should take it perhaps north of Puerto Rico, but it does mean that it puts the sort of the eastern seaboard of the United States in play for potential landfall, but it's really too far out to be able to determine its track with any certainty. So the National Weather Service is warning people that it's going to grow significantly and that Lee's hazards will extend well away from the center of the storm. So even if you don't see yourself or your location in the cone of uncertainty for its track, you should still go ahead and prepare, especially if you're in the Northeast and the New England and the Canadian Maritime provinces.
Because New York may get hit.
Yeah, see,
it
here's
looks
the
like.
Thing: is that you know it's really hard to tell this far out, but it's already churning and creating some storm surge and you know rip currents in southern Florida. That's expected to continue up the East Coast as it travels northward. And the thing is, back in 2013, Superstorm Sandy was also not expected to hit anywhere on the East Coast, and then it suddenly took a surprise left turn and shocked everybody. So that's why it's a good idea if you're anywhere where it could possibly hit on the Northeast Coast especially, go ahead and get ready. And I also want to mention one more thing.
I just want to say, especially with this storm, because it's over record warm waters, it's moving so slowly, which means it's having a huge amount of time to get organized, to pick up moisture.
And energy.
If it does, energy, if it makes landfall, even a part of it. in New York or New England or Canada, they could be looking at, again, huge amounts of rain.
Yeah, and if it's a geographically large storm, you can be 500 miles away and still get pummeled by rain and flooding and storm surge. So there's a big record that came along with Hurricane Lee when it hit Category 5 status for a couple of hours or a day out there in the open Atlantic. At that point, it created a new record. For the first time in recorded history, all seven ocean tropical cyclone basins produced a Category 5 storm in the same year. That is an example of how hot our oceans have gotten, because oceans absorb about 90% of the warming that humanity has generated in recent decades, from burning fossil fuels and creating, the greenhouse gas emissions that are trapping heat. And, you know, more heat in energy in the oceans means that storms are stronger, they hit high intensity more frequently, and they're a lot wetter, meaning they dump a lot more rain and cause a lot more flooding.
Oh, I'm sure everything is fine. Why are you such an alarmist, Desi Doyen? Thank you very much for being an alarmist, frankly, for all of those years. I wish more people were hearing the alarm. All right, let's take a quick break here, and we will come back with your calls, I hope, on whether Donald Trump should be disqualified from running for office in 2024 based on his violation of the 14th Amendment's Insurrection Disqualification Clause. Our phone number is 818-985-5735, 818-985-KPFK. Most notably, my question is not so much about whether the Constitution bars him from office. I believe it clearly does. But whether he should politically be prevented from running. Is that a good idea? I've got arguments both for and against, and I've got my own opinion on the matter, my own feeling on this matter that I've been discussing now for a couple of weeks, it seems like. But I would love to hear yours first. 818-985-KPFK. All of that is straight ahead on today's broadcast. I'm Brad Friedman. Don't touch that dial.
What the public hears on the public airwaves matters. At the broadcast, we do our best to bring you accurate news and analysis on the issues that actually matter, and we do it all independently without corporate or political influence. But we can't do it without you, now more than ever. Please help us stay on your public airwaves by going to bradblog.com/donate to help keep us going. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
Welcome back. It's the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. I cannot fight this feeling. We'll get to your calls in a moment at 818-985-5735. But as I've been noting for a while on this program, I have a feeling. It is not a prediction. It is not a promise. It is not even a certainty. It is a feeling that I have been having trouble shaking, that for a host of reasons, it is still quite possible that Donald Trump will, in fact, not be on the ballot next year, come November, that he may not be his party's nominee for president of the United States. I think it's still more likely than not that he will be running next year, but I am not as nearly as certain as many people seem to be right now. Now, there are a number of reasons for that feeling, and I spent some time on a bunch of them last week, I think it was, on the broadcast, including some polling numbers that show it would be a terrible idea, arguably, for Republicans to nominate him. He may wish to bargain against some of his criminal indictments at some point in order to stay out of prison in exchange for dropping out of the presidential race. He could, of course, also get ill between now and then, given all the nightmarish stress of four criminal indictments and more that is absolutely keeping him awake and terrified at night. But one of the biggest reasons, as referenced at the top of the show, is something that we've been covering on this program for more than 2 years now, but which is finally gaining traction in the mainstream corporate media. They have finally noticed First, they noticed the Coffee County breach in Georgia that we broke on this program. They finally started to notice that. Now they've started to notice Section 3 of the 14th Amendment of the Constitution. In that case, largely thanks to two so-called conservative legal scholars who have sort of shored up the premise. You know, it doesn't matter if it's somebody like me talking about it or the experts we've had on this show, because they don't happen to be like from the Federalist Society, like these two the right-wing Federalist Society, like these two legal scholars. In any event, it is the Constitution's so-called Insurrection Disqualification Clause. It's spelled out by the 14th Amendment that Donald Trump, or anyone, having taken an oath of office to protect and defend the Constitution, and then goes on to engage in an insurrection against the same, specifically in Trump's case on January 6, 2021. Anyone like that is now constitutionally disqualified, barred from running or holding office. It's just one of the reasons that I have had this feeling that I've discussed on this show on a number of occasions that Trump may not even ultimately end up being on the ballot at all by November of 2024. As noted, there are other reasons to proceed very carefully on this matter, but I would love to get your thoughts on all of the above. 818-985-5735. That's 818-985-KPFK. I will also keep my eye on my Twitter feed at TheBradBlog. Yes, the site still known as Twitter. And my email via bradcast@bradblog.com. We spent some time, again, I think it was last week, on a number of secretaries of state around the country who have finally begun to be asked about it and have clearly been grappling with this novel situation that hasn't really come up before. A president running for office who would be, should be, arguably is disqualified from running for office under the post-Civil War era Section 3 of the 14th Amendment. We played several clips from a bunch of those secretaries of state last week as they responded to questions on this, pretty much uniformly saying they did not know the answer yet. They were looking into it and that the matter would ultimately be decided by the U.S. Supreme Court no matter what. And I think that, at least, is certainly, almost certainly true. The idea of barring former President Donald Trump from seeking the presidency on grounds that it would violate the 14th Amendment is an increasingly catchy constitutional argument, writes Politico, pushed by a segment of legal scholars and activists. But it turns out election officials have been discussing how to handle this for months. Quote, "We have been thinking about this in my office for quite some time," said Colorado Secretary of State Jenna Griswold, a Democrat, in an interview. She noted that, quote, "there have been conversations among other secretaries of state as well." She is, in fact, the head of the Secretaries of State Association. I forget what it is called. So she is in touch with a lot of secretaries around the country. The government watchdog group is now testing the theory in Colorado. Last week, Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington, or CREW, sued Jenna Griswold, the Secretary of State in Colorado, sued in Colorado court to have Trump declared ineligible. It's one of the first lawsuits to bar the former president from the ballot. It is not likely the last. Griswold said, "We can expect a lot of lawsuits filed on this issue across the nation. I'm really hopeful that this case will provide guidance to election officials." She chairs, there we go, the Democratic Association of Secretaries of State. She said, "This is an unprecedented situation. We've never had a president incite an insurrection and attack our democracy like this." There are several things, she says, that are unclear when it comes to how the 14th Amendment may apply to ballot access. The U.S. Constitution, she noted, does not say whether someone who has engaged in insurrection is prohibited from running for office or just prohibited from being seated in that office. Colorado law, she said, is also arguably unclear on this point. Other secretaries of state have also publicly discussed the matter Adrian Fontes, the Democratic Secretary of State of Arizona, Jocelyn Benson, the Democratic Secretary of State in Michigan, New Hampshire's Republican Secretary of State, David Scanlon, said that he is seeking the advice of the Attorney General in New Hampshire. For his part, Georgia's Republican Secretary of State, Brad Raffensperger, wrote an op-ed Wednesday in the Wall Street Journal saying he did not have the authority to use the 14th Amendment to block Trump from the ballot, and suggested that it would be unwise for election officials elsewhere to do so. Quote, Georgia law contemplates a legal process that must take place before anyone is removed from the ballot, he wrote. Anyone who believes in democracy must let the voters decide. I think it is clearly not up to the voters, frankly, but up to the state officials, election officials responsible for deciding if a candidate has received the legal number of signatures required on a petition, if the candidate has met the residency or constitutional citizenship requirements to be on the ballot. We played part of this at the top of the show, but let me play it a bit more at length here just to help set things up. Here's former federal prosecutor Andrew Weissman being asked about this very matter by MSNBC's Jen Psaki, formerly Joe Biden's press secretary, over the weekend.
This is a novel issue because we haven't had this situation with a former president now seeking to be elected who has, by all accounts, colloquially engaged in insurrection. There are very prominent conservative scholars and judges who have said that it does apply to former President Trump. Obviously, I think this will end up at the Supreme Court to decide the issue. I would agree that politically it may be better for the country if people can vote on this and have it not decided on the basis of a provision in the Constitution, but we can't avoid that any more than if it turned out that someone who was 34 years old was running for president, they would be disqualified. They're not qualified under the Constitution. So this really does have to be decided by the Supreme Court about whether he is actually qualified to be the next president of the United States.
Now, it does and will eventually be decided almost certainly by the Supreme Court. But that doesn't mean you can't decide. And I'm not talking about whether you believe that the Constitution allows secretaries of state, for example, to block Donald Trump from being on the ballot, finding he's unqualified, doesn't meet the requirements of the Constitution. But rather, is it a good idea? Setting the politics aside, is it a good idea to prevent Donald Trump from being able to run next year? Now, there are a number of rather timid elected Democrats in Congress who have been ringing in on the issue, at least have been forced to by journalists in recent days. Peter Welch, Democrat of Vermont, said, quote, voters have to make the decision. The American people are going to have to weigh in here. We've got to win the election, so that's for courts to resolve, said Virginia's Democratic Senator Tim Kaine. Adding when pressed, quote, the language in the amendment and the legal scholars that are talking about it say that there was an attempt to conduct an insurrection against the Constitution. He said he thinks that's a very powerful argument. Senator Sheldon Whitehouse, Democrat from Rhode Island, said, quote, it's a very credible argument. We'll need a judicial determination to assess its applicability to Trump. There's a reason why that provision was in the Constitution, said Democratic U.S. Senator Ben Cardin of Maryland. Senator Elizabeth Warren exclaimed, reportedly chuckling as she did, quote, Donald Trump is disqualified in so many different meanings of that word, including being the first candidate with 90 criminal charges. Sorry, it's actually 91, Senator. But who's counting? She went on to say, so I'm glad for people to make their arguments, but this is just more on top of more, and it will persuade the people who are already persuaded. It won't persuade those who aren't. Well, maybe. But I'm not actually hoping to persuade anybody. I think the text of the Constitution is clear for any so-called originalists, textualists, to be able to read and understand. No constitutional law experts are needed here. The Section 3 of the 14th Amendment is pretty clear. You may feel otherwise. If so, give me a call, 818-985-5735. But what I'd most like to hear from you on is setting aside what the Constitution, in my opinion, clearly says about it. Should this be a matter for the courts or for the voters to decide? It's clear how some Democrats feel about it. Here is former Senator Claire McCaskill of Missouri late last week.
Politically, let's think about this for a minute. Does Joe Biden want Donald Trump off the ballot? Or does he want to run against a known quantity that is terribly unpopular and polling awful with independents and Democratic voters across the country?
Never mind if he can be disqualified. Should he be? Politically, should he be disqualified from running next year? There's a lot of reasons to argue, as I said, in both directions. Let's hear what you have to say. 818-985-KPFK. Let me go to Bill in Santa Monica. There we go. Hey, Bill, welcome to the broadcast, sir.
Thank you. It doesn't matter politically. The law, the Constitution, and people who swear by the Constitution, especially those strict constructionists, say that we obey the Constitution. If the Constitution says he shouldn't run, he shouldn't run. Or he can't. He should be disqualified. Mm-hmm. I listened to David Frum, that right-wing speechwriter and commentator.
Yep.
And the other day, and he said, it's fantasy to believe that you can stop Donald Trump from running because of the Constitution, because the Trumpansies would get really angry.
Mm-hmm.
This sounds so much like I've read a lot about Civil War, pre-Civil War. Mm-hmm. This country sounds just like pro-Civil War. The South, they fought duels, they rode horses, they shot guns, and they were eager to fight. And look what happened. This is the same thing now. You have these people backing Trump, these right wingers, who stormed the Capitol 2 years ago. One thing: these people—it's a lot of talk. They're not going to fight. I never saw a revolutionary. If you look at that crowd that stormed the Capitol, have you ever seen revolutionaries that old? There were very few people. Even in their 20s. They were 30s, 40s, mostly 50s. One guy had his mother carrying strip ties with him in the Capitol building. I don't know why the left is so afraid of these people. They're not going to fight, and if they do fight, they'll lose. The Constitution is a man like that shouldn't even be considered to be president. He's a horrible individual. He's not. Have you ever heard a man that age and tell a friend, not as a criticism, but he said, this has been verified by his friends, I'm the same guy I was when I was 5 years old. Anybody who says that is not qualified.
He's proud of that. Bill, let me run this by you. So we had, when we talked about this last week, a commenter over at Daily Kos rang in to say, for me, optimal would be Trump getting the primary win before a few must-win states determine that the 14th Amendment disqualifies him from appearing on their ballot. The GOP mayhem would be glorious to witness. And I read that and I thought, well, would it? Let me share with you a note. Josh Marshall over at TPM has been writing about the matter of late. He received this response from one of his readers. I'll just share part of this. If Trump is actively removed from a ballot, whether that's with the Supreme Court's blessing or not, how are we not going to have armed rebellion? And I'm not just referring to swing states, this person writes. I live in Oregon. We're a blue state, but like many other blue states, the vast majority of our geography is deep red. Do you think that if Oregon's all Democratic leadership took Trump off the ballot, that the Republicans here would just load more Let's Go Brandon flags on their trucks and call it a day? Not a chance, they write. They would revolt in Oregon. And honestly, I'd wager the vast majority of states, it won't matter if the Supreme Court approved the state's request, because it would have been the partisan Democrats requesting it in the first place. Trump will then tell them SCOTUS is corrupt, and they'll believe it. The only way this doesn't go horribly wrong, he writes, is if the ongoing court is if the ongoing court cases either lead to a pre-election conviction or uncover unreported atrocities by Trump that force the entire party establishment to turn against him. Neither seems likely. I'd love to see Trump disqualified in a deep, visceral sort of way, but it would be reckless and foolish not to consider the full range of potential costs, which could include acts of insurrection far beyond those we have already seen. How do you respond to that, Bill?
It's a threat. I mean, you can't obey the Constitution. They say don't obey the Constitution because we're going to get mad. And all I can say is get mad. I mean, if you back down from something like this because of threat of some violence by some crazies, then this country's finished. It's ruined.
Thanks, Bill. I do appreciate your call very much. 818-985-KPFK is our phone number. Let me go to Roger in Minneapolis. Hey, Roger. Good to hear from you, my friend. Thanks for calling us today on the broadcast.
Always delighted to participate, Brad. I'm going to disappoint you and not be a contrasting viewpoint to the previous caller.
You don't have to be any. You were never disappointing me, Roger. Whatever you, any callers, I just want to know their feeling. That's all. I'm not looking for a fight.
I feel vehemently that Trump is not entitled to even be on any ballot. He belongs buried under the freaking jail. But the idea that we would be intimidated and then cause that to be a consideration, or that it might be politically advantageous to allow things to result in him being on the ballot, both, to my mind, are utter poppycock. I think it is highly likely, as do you, that Trump will not be on the ballot, and I think they're grooming Youngkin to be the one who they fly in, and I think you've noticed the same idea.
I'm not saying it's highly likely he will not be on the ballot, but I can't, like the song says, I can't fight that feeling anymore, so yeah.
Well, I can't either, but honestly, Brad, there's no... To my mind, if this is going to be any kind of an ongoing republic, we're not going to be intimidated by a few crazies. Absolutely not.
Thank you.
That's it.
Thank
There's
you.
Nothing more for me to say.
Thank you, Roger. I greatly appreciate it. Good hearing from you. I know you guys have been having some redonkulously warm weather up there in Minneapolis of late. So hopefully winter will, or autumn at least, will finally show up on some sort of schedule. Thanks, Roger. Good to hear from you, my friend.
I arrived 3 days ago.
There we go. Glad to hear
it. Thank you, Brad.
Everything is fine. 818-985-KPFK is our phone number. Let me go to Andy in Winnetka. Hey, Andy, welcome to the broadcast.
Hi, Brad.
And Desi says, puts out a note, says, hey, remind the ladies to call in because we got nothing but dudes. So where are you, ladies? We'd love to hear from you as well. Let's hear if they want to pick a fight with the Republicans the way all the dudes do. Anyway, hey, Andy.
Hey, Brad. I think he's totally disqualified from running. And his followers have shown they don't respect the results of an election. So an election won't be the end of it. And so, therefore, he shouldn't be allowed to run, and the Constitution is clear. That's basically all I have to say.
All right. So even if violence erupts, he should be removed from the ballot, and he should, and even though he's the far and away favorite of Republican primary voters, you think he should not, he should be disqualified, and that's just too bad for Republicans.
Yeah, because that would happen anyway, because they've shown that they don't respect results of an election. If he loses the vote, they're going to say it was rigged, and the same old, right?
All right. Probably, yeah. Thanks, Andy. I appreciate the call. Thank you. 818-985-KPFK. Casey writes in, frequent listener, writes in to say, if we use the 14th Amendment on Trump, The Republicans will trump up a reason to use it on Gavin Newsom and every other Democrat that gets elected president. I'll bet you a bag of pretzels on it, he says. It's his biggest bet. He notes, he added, anything we do to rein in the right, they will use against us. Witness the witless campaign to impeach President Biden. Well, maybe, Casey. Thank you for the note. But I don't find that particularly persuasive. The Constitution says what the Constitution says, at least until our corrupted, stolen, and packed U.S. Supreme Court decides that the Constitution is actually unconstitutional. And you can bet they are already twisting themselves, speaking of pretzels, twisting themselves into pretzels, trying to figure out how once this gets to them, somehow they're going to deny what the Constitution actually says to anyone who is an originalist, a textualist, who can look at the words of the Constitution, look at the words of the framers of the 14th Amendment, and know exactly what they say. And yet, these so-called textualists and originalists on the right on the U.S. Supreme Court, well, they're going to have to come up with something, aren't they? Either that, or they're going to have to say, yeah, Donald Trump should be disqualified. So I don't find it, no matter what the, however the right, the Republicans might reply, respond to this. And as Casey says, use it against Gavin Newsom and every other Democrat that gets elected. Good, let them try. I don't find that particularly persuasive. The Constitution says what it says. Now, if Republicans want to misuse that Constitution, well, that's on them. And I think that the voters will have a thought on that. The voters will have an opinion about that if Republicans try to do exactly that. We saw that after Bill Clinton's stupid, ridiculous impeachment. And I think that Republicans will really be doing themselves in here if they try the same nonsense trying to impeach Joe Biden. So that's what they're talking about doing. Let them do it. I don't think it's going to work out well for them. 818-985-KPFK. Let me go to John in Apple Valley. Hey, John, welcome to the broadcast. Oh, John. John, are you there? Okay, John, we'll have to let John go, unfortunately. And you said he was a Republican?
No, he was basically saying that he was concerned that there doesn't seem to be a similar push ahead, it sounded like, for Republican congressmen who also helped Trump not only plot and plan, but actually, you know, were ready to participate to help further the plot on January 6th. They haven't been held accountable either. I mean, I know that there have been a few challenges to them, but they haven't exactly come through yet.
Yeah, so. And there are going to be, as I say, a lot of lawsuits, whether it's about Trump or some of these other people, I think. They did attempt to go after Marjorie Taylor Greene in that regard in Georgia, where they had sort of a terrible decision, frankly, by the judge in that case. So we will have to see. Commenter Alex at bradblog.com writes to say, Brad, the rational takeaway should be that the Federalist Society is suspiciously hyping an illegal idea to remove Trump from the ballot before he is legally found guilty of insurrection. This is a reference to those Federalist Society legal experts who wrote a 126-page paper, literally, for a law review that you know, suddenly, once Republicans start talking about it, now the corporate media decides it's okay for them to talk about it, too. So the rational takeaway should be that the Federalist Society suspiciously hyping an illegal idea so that he doesn't win the nomination and it causes a blue wave in the general. Why amplify their disinformation campaign? Remember, the Republicans have terrible policies and use dishonest tactics. Alex writes, we briefly worked together when we had mutual enemies, but we are not friends. Their comeuppance is near, and we, the left, should be throwing extra gas on that fire. We want a democracy where it's the voters and laws who effectively disqualify a candidate. Anything less is a slippery slope. So he's saying that this is some sort of a scam. A scam by the Federalist Society somehow to anger the folks on the right and, you know, get Donald Trump out, anger the folks on the right or something. I'm having trouble understanding exactly what Alex is getting to here. But I think that what Alex is suggesting is that if Donald Trump is allowed to run on the ballot, that Donald Trump will lose and that he will people in the House, Republicans will lose the House, Republicans will lose in the U.S. Senate. Now, that's a political analysis of the situation as to the results of disqualifying Trump. It would give Republicans a better chance next year, both for winning the White House and other offices on Donald Trump's coattails, is, I guess, what Alex is arguing. I think the opposite is actually true. I think Republicans will do a lot better if Donald Trump is not on the ballot. But as to the notion that this is some sort of a trick by the Federalist Society, look, I loathe the Federalist Society as much as anyone. Their dishonest, bad faith tactics. And maybe they do have those ambitions. I don't know. But the fact is that the constitutional scholars, honest or dishonest ones, are not needed to understand Section 3 of the 14th Amendment. Read it for yourself. You may or may not like what it says. You may find it, you know, politically troubling in some way, but it says what it says, and clearly so. That Trump, under Section 3 of the 14th Amendment, is disqualified from the ballot for good or ill. You may think the Constitution is wrong, but it is the Constitution. And as a supporter of the Constitution, I must support the Constitution. Even if I would have no quarrel with anyone's efforts to amend it as they see fit regarding this. Let me go to, Michael in Van Nuys. Hey, Michael, welcome to the broadcast.
Yeah, listening to your discussion here, I think the one thing that you're missing is this whole thing turns on the definition of insurrection. I'm a lawyer. And
this whole, and say that again because your phone sort of broke up. This whole thing turns on what, Michael?
The definition of insurrection.
The definition of insurrection, right.
Yeah. I'm an attorney, and I know that the first thing I would do if I were Trump's lawyer is I would, argue that insurrection doesn't cover what happened there, that there weren't armed battles to attempt to take over the state, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, like there would have been in the Whiskey Rebellion or one of the, the Civil War and such. And I would argue that that's what I would argue.
Mm-hmm.
That was it. So we're not political visual thinking is fine.
Well, Michael, let me ask you this: the U.S. Senate, a majority of senators in the U.S. Senate, a bipartisan majority, seven Republicans included, determined that it was in fact an insurrection. Shouldn't that be enough for the U.S. Supreme Court?
No, not at all. Legislatures can reach opinions on this or that, but that doesn't necessarily mean that that's how a court's going to interpret a particular law. You know, I certainly would go before the court and say that that was not an insurrection. And I'm a lawyer, skilled lawyer, but that's what I would argue if I was in his position.
What about all of the, and I understand that you'd make that argument. I'm figuring out how I would respond in kind. You know, we had all the Proud Boys and the Oath Keepers and so forth. They were found guilty of seditious conspiracy. And there are references to insurrection in those charges. Isn't that enough?
Mm-hmm. And then you're going to have to connect to Trump directly to them, which hasn't been done.
Well, no. Your point was that it's the definition of an insurrection, that he would argue that that was not an insurrection. Well, if courts of law have referred to this as an insurrection, if the U.S. Senate has 57-43 voted that it was an insurrection, I mean, how much more do we need to convince a court that it was, in fact, an insurrection?
Tell that to the court. But that's certainly what my position would be. When I look at it, I don't see it as an insurrection, even looking at it from a leftist position.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of what we're pushing now in terms of punishment of these people, et cetera, that took part in that is going to come slamming back on us the next time there's a Black Lives Matter. We're going to see 20-year sentences instead of you know, 10 days and do some community service.
But what?
Because of the precedent we're setting right now.
But what precedent? I mean, in all of these cases, the people who have been charged, and we're talking about 1,000 or so people who have been charged and sentenced, have gotten lower sentences than the prosecutors have asked for. So if this is, if this is the precedent...
Yeah. They're getting sentences that are dramatically larger than anything that's ever been done on a political demonstrations in the past.
Well, this is not
and
a... This
look,
is...
what's look what's happening in Georgia right now.
Michael.
Right now, under the top city.
Michael, this is not... yes, they're getting dramatically larger sentences than anything for a demonstration. This was not a demonstration. This was an attempt to overturn the U.S. government. And I know you think that, oh, it wasn't much of an insurrection. Well, courts disagree. There's a court in New Mexico has removed an official who took place in the insurrection, removed him from office because it was a violation of Section 3 of the 14th Amendment. So this,
that's your argument.
Yeah,
that's
my argument.
This is not conclusive. This is going to be determined by how the Supreme Court defines insurrection.
Yep.
Eventually.
Gotcha. Thank you, Michael. I do appreciate it. And by the way, that could be sooner rather than later, because the primary elections begin like in January, February, March of next year. And that means that these states need to have their ballots set within the next couple of months, in December or January. They need to know who's going to be on the ballot. So they're going to make decisions about it. It's going to have to go up to the courts. It's going to go all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court, and it's going to move very quickly. All right, speaking of moving quickly, we've got, oh, man, just a minute or two here. Very quickly, Al in Huntington Beach. Welcome to the broadcast. What's on your mind? Very quickly, sir.
Hello, yes. We should just let Trump run, man, because that way we can weed all his supporters, and we know exactly where they stand. I mean, Pelosi wants to run again, and, we already lost the House. We could have won it if they would have supported some progressives that were on the ballot.
Yeah.
And we could have, ended this whole mess.
Yeah.
No, we keep running the same dogs in the fight.
All right. Separate issue, Al, and I do got to get out, but a separate issue. But, the fact that you think it's okay for him to violate the Constitution and then let him run anyway? What does the Constitution mean if we do that? We might as well tear it up. Mo in Long Beach, give me 10 seconds, brother. Sorry, that's all the time I got.
I ain't playing no semantics, Bradley. Ain't no difference between an insurrection and a failed coup attempt. Thank you.
Thank you, Mo. No difference between this election and a failed coup attempt. All right. Thanks to everyone else who I couldn't get to today. Greatly appreciate you ringing in. Sorry I couldn't get to everyone. My thanks to our producer, Desi Doyen, to my board operator, Wendell Handy, and to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's program, you can download it anytime for free at bradblog.com. Drop me an email. I'm bradcast@bradblog.com. And on the Facebooks, Mastodons, and sites still known as Twitter, I am The Brad Blog. See you there. Until we see you here, hopefully tomorrow, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.
You're listening to The Bradcast. We are 100% listener-supported, thanks to listeners like you who drop by bradblog.com/donate.